Here it is!
From deep inside your audio device of choice.
So, ladies and gentlemen, it appears on the evidence of this week's news that a couple years in jail does not cure one of congenital lying, which is good to know, lest you're thinking that you might try it as a cure. I'm not talking about you who are listening now, but you, the theoretical you. On the other hand, when testimony in the only Trump trial going on right now resumes this week, informed sources indicate that Michael Cohen, who is returning to the witness stand to complete his cross-examination and then presumably a re-prosecution questioning to kind of clean up the mess, as I say, informed sources indicate that his explanation for the apparent misstatement regarding a particular phone call between Michael Cohen and President Trump, then President Trump, he will blame that mistake on Samuel Alito's wife. Hello, welcome to the show.
Trouble in mind, oh, I'm blue, but I won't be blue always. The sun is gonna shine in my back door someday. Oh, trouble in mind, I've been blue, I have almost lost my mind, but the sun is gonna shine. Someday. mind. Oh, I'm blue, but I won't be blue always. The sun is gonna shine in my back door someday. I said it is, I know it is. Well, the sun is gonna shine in my back door someday. I said I know it is.
From New Orleans, Louisiana, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show and welcoming KNVC in Carson City, Nevada, joining the ever-expanding The Show Network. You may not know it, but it is. See, there's KNVC. Not KNBC. Oh, God, no. KNV, as in victory, see. But enough about that. Let's listen to this.
I just want to say one word to you. Just one word.
Yes, sir.
Are you listening?
Yes, I am.
Microplastics. Think about it. Will you think about it?
Yes, I will.
Enough said.
Oh, there's never enough said. University of New Mexico researchers have detected significant concentrations of microplastics in the testicular tissue of both humans and dogs. What's going on there? Hey, down. Adding to growing concern about their possible effect on human reproductive health. In a new paper published in the journal Toxicological Sciences, a team out of the University of New Mexico reported finding 12 types of microplastics in 47 canine and 23 human testes. I said testes. Quote, our study revealed the presence of microplastics in all human and canine testes. Professor John Yu, not the John Yu you're thinking of. Not that guy. Not the guy who said it was okay to torture. It's a different John Yu. Whole different Yu. He said our study revealed the presence of microplastics in all human and canine testes, unquote. Team was also able to quantify the amount of microplastics in the tissue samples using a novel analytical method that revealed correlations between certain types of plastic and reduced sperm count among the canines. Yu studies the impact of various environmental factors on the human reproductive system, said heavy metals, pesticides, and endocrine-disrupting chemicals have all been implicated in a global decline in sperm count and quality in recent years. A conversation with his colleague at the UNM College of Pharmacy, who has documented the presence of microplastics in human placentas, led him to wonder whether something else might be at work. Yu said, have you considered why there is this decline in reproductive potential more recently? There must be something new, he's quoting the colleague. That led you to design a study using the same experimental that his colleague had used in his lab work on placentas. His team obtained anonymized human tissue from the New Mexico Office of the Medical Investigator, which collects tissue during autopsies, and stores it for 7 years before disposing of it. The canine tissue came from City of Albuquerque animal shelters and private veterinary clinics that perform spay-neutering operations. The team chemically treated the samples to dissolve the fat and proteins, spun each sample in an ultracentrifuge. I like my centrifuges to be ultra, don't you? Leaving a nugget of plastic at the bottom of a tube. Then the plastic pellet was heated in a metal cup up to 1100 degrees Fahrenheit, They used a mass spectrometer to analyze gas emissions as different types of plastic burned at specific temperatures. In human tissue, the average concentration was 329 micrograms per gram of the plastics. That's nearly three times higher than in dogs and significantly higher than the average concentration found in placental tissue. At the beginning, you said I doubted whether microplastics could penetrate the reproductive system. Those are his words. When I first received the results for dogs, I was surprised. I was even more surprised when I received the results for humans, unquote. The researchers found the most prevalent polymer in both human and canine tissue was polyethylene, used to make plastic bags and bottles. Yeah, that's why you're seeing those commercials right now. About bottles. In dogs, that was followed by PVC, which is used in industrial, municipal, and household plumbing, as well as many other applications. Higher levels of PVC in the tissue, this is canine tissue, correlated with a lower sperm count. Quoting you, the plastic makes a difference. What type of plastic might be correlated with potential function? PVC can release a lot of chemicals that interfere with spermatogenesis, and it contains chemicals that cause endocrine disruption. Canine sperm counts also seem to be dropping, you said. Quoting, we believe dogs and humans share common environmental factors that contribute to sperm count declines, unquote. Just one word, microplastics. And now?
It's a smart world after all. It's a smart world after all. It's a smart world after all. It's a smart, smart world.
Well, the U.S. National Highway Transportation Safety Administration, NHTSA, this week opened an investigation into self-driving car maker Waymo, following reports that its robocars have not been complying with traffic laws. What are these laws you're talking about? NHTSA's Office of Defects Investigation, the ODI, said it has received reports of 22 incidents in which Waymo cars running its fifth-generation automated driving system had crashed or exhibited driving behavior that potentially violated traffic safety laws. The incidents include collisions with objects like gates, chains, parked vehicles, as well as showing an apparent disregard for general traffic safety. Sounds like they're getting closer to us. Waymo reported some of its own incidents, fulfilling its obligations under NHTSA rules, but other issues involving its vehicles entering construction zones or heading toward oncoming traffic came to the agency through public reports. Here's a cute. NHTSA understands that the Waymo automated driving system was either engaged throughout the incident or in certain cases when supervised by a test driver in the vehicle itself. The automated driving system disengaged just before an incident occurred, the agency said. The ODI characterized its inquiry as a preliminary evaluation of Waymo's fifth-generation automated driving system. The investigation will assess how the robocars avoid collisions and detect and respond to traffic control devices. A Waymo spokesperson brushed off the incidents, this according to the British tech journal The Register, by suggesting the number of incidents is statistically insignificant compared to its overall successful operations. Quote, at Waymo, we currently serve over 50,000 weekly trips for our riders in some of the most challenging and complex environments, said a spokesperson for the robocar concern. Continuing, we're proud of our performance and safety record over tens of millions of autonomous miles driven, as well as our demonstrated commitment to safety transparency. Unquote. It's not just Waymo under the microscope. Last week, the ODI said it was looking at Zoox robocars based on reports that ADS-equipped vehicles had braked suddenly, causing motorcycles behind to collide with the car and sustain minor injuries. GM Cruise, different company, which suspended autonomous taxi service in San Francisco after injuring a pedestrian last October and later saw NHTSA recall the cars, says this week it is resuming autonomous driving with supervision in Phoenix, Arizona. You can't stop Cruise. And now, news of Musk love. This appears in an Australian newspaper, the Sydney Morning Herald. No equivalent that I've been able to find in the American press so far. Tesla has moved to reassure Australian consumers it's going to continue to expand its supercharger network in Australia. This, despite closing down almost the entire 500-strong workforce in the global Tesla division working on superchargers. Well, who's good? Elon Musk's decision last fortnight to fire the team responsible for superchargers has left the industry reeling, according to the Australian paper. Tesla's supercharger stations, you may know, allow EV drivers to charge their vehicles in a matter of minutes. They're widely considered to be the gold standard model of charging stations and have been credited with increasing the take-up of other electric vehicles, which can also charge using the Tesla hardware. Musk wrote on the former Twitter, which he owns, that Tesla still planned to grow its global supercharger network, quote, just at a slower pace, unquote, like without any workers. In a rare public statement, Tesla emailed Australian customers this week, assuring them the supercharger network was, quote, still core to Tesla's mission, unquote, and maintaining work would continue on the current rollout of superchargers. Quote, the supercharger network will continue to be expanded, a Tesla statement said. Continuing the quote, projects currently in construction are continuing to be completed and put into operation, unquote, using the work of nobody, apparently. Quote, supercharger sites are continuing to be serviced and maintained by our team, with operational support being provided, unquote, Tesla. The company has rolled out more than 50,000 supercharger stations globally. The news, coupled with the collapse last month of major charging infrastructure producer Tritium, didn't know about that, has observers spooked, says the Australian paper. Will Jameson, formerly Tesla's lead of supercharging programs, wrote on X, quote, what this means for the charging network and all the exciting work we were doing across the industry, I don't yet know, unquote. Dr. Bjorn Sternberg, a senior research fellow at Australian National University who specializes in electric vehicles, says consumer confidence is absolutely critical to persuading motorists to adopt electric vehicles. Quote, the perceived and material availability of chargers is central to this, he says. While we wait to see what damages these redundancies will have materially on the supercharger network, the damage to perceptions of a reliable charging network have already occurred, particularly coming soon after the collapse of Tritium, unquote, him. The decision to fire reported 500 staff members in the supercharger division came after Tesla posted its first quarter earnings, which reported a 9% fall in revenue, the biggest decline since 2012. said the head of the Australian Electric Vehicle Association. Quote, it was a classic Musk move. Erratic, unpredictable, not unlike a tantrum, unquote. But on the other hand, rumors persist that Musk will soon introduce a self-listening podcast. From New Orleans, this is Le Show. And speaking of New Orleans, this program over the years has attempted to bring you all that's known and knowable about one of the major news stories at the beginning of this century, known in shorthand as Katrina. Sometimes it's called Hurricane Katrina, which did, in fact, impact the Mississippi Gulf Coast as it made landfall. But then the hurricane tracked up and eastward, avoiding a direct impact on New Orleans. So what happened in the city of New Orleans became a question that lots of folks tackled. Two university-based investigations proceeded from the fact that when the head of the then-existent New Orleans Hurricane Center at LSU, Louisiana State University. He came into town to look at the damage a couple days after the arrival of the hurricane on land and noticed something peculiar. Walls that lined canals inside the city that had failed. They've tumbled, letting water run into the city. Those walls, those walls had high water marks nowhere near the top of the wall. That is to say, the one-time official explanation for why the walls collapsed is that they were overtopped by water rushing into the city from nearby Lake Pontchartrain, which was receiving water from the Gulf of Mexico as a result of the passage of the hurricane over the area. The problem he discovered right away is, as I say, the watermark was nowhere near the top of the wall. Therefore, the walls couldn't have been toppled from above, water rushing in and overtopping them. They were undermined from below. And that started, as I say, these investigations into what really happened. Now, I haven't yet mentioned the name of the agency responsible for all this, who built the walls that could not survive the inundation of water, that tumbled down due to water coming beneath them and undermining them. That agency, as regular listeners know to this program, no, it's the United States Army Corps of Engineers. Well, after all this happened, Congress, in its way, decided something had to be done to replace the system that failed. A system that the retiring head of the Army Corps of Engineers said in his goodbye speech was a system in name only. So Congress gave $14 billion to build a new, supposedly more resilient system, and gave it to the very same agency, the United States Army Corps of Engineers, because that's who does this kind of work in the United States. So we have now been following that story in the almost 20 years since Katrina. The new system has been built. Pumps installed in it were found by a whistleblower inside the Corps of Engineers to be defective. They had to be replaced. And what came in their wake was a system that had a 50-year lifespan proclaimed by the Army Corps of Engineers, then a 35-year lifespan. And now, last year, a year ago, pretty much right now, the Corps reported that the pumps at the heart of this new system to protect New Orleans were corroding after only 3 years of service, if you want to call it that. The Corps announced they were going to fix things and investigate the cause of the corrosion. This is an agency that has been putting metal objects in water for more than a century, and it now announces, as I say, a year ago, they were going to find out why they were corroding. The city survived unscathed for much the same reason that it has for the last two decades. Most hurricanes in the post-Katrina era haven't gone into the Gulf of Mexico. They've gone up the Atlantic coast. The city hasn't been threatened. Here's the latest. Work to repair corroding pumps that serve as vital cogs in New Orleans' hurricane protection system. That's according to the local newspaper, NOLA.com. That work has been boosted by a settlement between the Army Corps and the companies it contracted with to carry out the job. The settlement sets out a plan for permanently repairing the pumps, which were designed to last 35 years, but have already corroded despite only being completed in 2018. Enough pumping capacity will be in place for this hurricane season, which begins June 1st, through a combination of temporary and permanent repairs on the 17 pumps, according to the Corps. No work will take place during hurricane season. The agreement will see the Corps contribute $24 million to the costs of correcting the problem with the joint venture of private companies that carried out the work, PCCPJV, taking on the rest, according to the Corps spokesperson, who's been the Corps spokesman ever since Katrina. The two sides didn't provide a figure for how much the joint venture would cover. Four lawsuits filed in the Court of Federal Claims by PCCP back in April show the Corps initially demanded $73 million. The settlement agreement has not been filed in court. The commander for the Corps in New Orleans referred to the settlement in an update on the repair work. As part of this process coming through and understanding what would be needed to ensure that we got the 35-year design life, the Corps is going to be introducing $24 million of additional resiliency features into these pumps, the local commander said. The joint venture said in a statement, quote, the parties have agreed on a path forward with each taking on costs needed to address the pump corrosion issues. It added, it was, quote, committed to repairing and making incremental improvements to the project pumps and pump stations, which are designed to help mitigate storm damage and support the safety of the people in this region, unquote. The Corps now sets out a 3-year plan for completing repairs of the pumps. They sit at the end of 3 key drainage canals in the city. The pumps are only used during tropical storms and are totally separate from the city's own pumping system, which operates to, use a term of art, dewater the city every time it rains. The state has also filed suit against the Corps over the pumps. It's a precautionary move to ensure none of the costs fall on the state of Louisiana. It won't move forward with the suit unless necessary. The corrosion announced to the public last year alarmed those with memories of the failures during Katrina when poorly built flood protections crumbled, inundating 80% of the city, killing a couple thousand and changing the city forever. Now I get to the fun part of the story. The underlying cause of the corrosion of the pumps is not yet clear. As part of the settlement, the Corps will carry out work that includes replacing parts with stainless steel. The 3-year process of repairing the pumps began last year with temporary work. 4 pumps are currently being permanently repaired with the aim of having them ready to go by June 1st of this year. That's the latest on a story which the national media really stopped covering 2 weeks after the destruction occurred. That's why I'm still talking about it. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the godly. The head of Poland's Catholic Episcopate, Tadeusz Wojda, has been accused of negligence in dealing with reports of sexual abuse carried out by one of his subordinates. In one case, he allegedly argued that no abuse had taken place because, quote, it was just groping, unquote. In response to the claims, the spokesman for his archdiocese has issued a statement denying the accusations against the archbishop, accused the journalist who made them of presenting a fragmentary and distorted version of the story. The claims were made last week in a lengthy article by the editor-in-chief of a leading Catholic news magazine. He noted that the details of Wojda's alleged negligence had in fact been first published a couple years ago in another Catholic news magazine. They had gone largely unnoticed at the time because they were published at the time of Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Yeah, you get distracted. And three women who say they experienced abuse at a religious boarding school or schools in Missouri staged a demonstration this week in Springfield. Survivors have called on the state attorney general to investigate the private Christian boarding schools, not Catholic. The three women were in downtown Springfield to argue that religious boarding schools in the state operate in what they see as a lightly regulated environment that's ripe for adults to abuse students. Local TV station checking federal and state court records found at least 23 civil lawsuits related to accusations of boarding school abuse, all filed in the last 2 years against just two Christian boarding schools in southwest Missouri. Agape Boarding School and Circle of Hope Girls Ranch in Humansville. Humansville, Missouri, ladies and gentlemen. Both schools are now reportedly closed, but they're not the only Missouri boarding schools to attract scrutiny. ABM Ministries Lighthouse Christian Academy is now closed. The married owners, Larry and Carmen Musgrave, were arrested a couple months ago on kidnapping charges. Preliminary hearings in their cases are expected next month. And one of the girls was sent to Circle of Hope Girls Ranch and boarding school. Stuck there, she says, until I was nearly 21. I was 6 months shy of turning 21 before I finally escaped and found some sense of normality. It took a long time for me finally to gain traction, as far as anybody listening, about Circle of Hope, and that was severely devastating for me, as it was severely abusive and traumatic for all of us that were there. Unquote. Amanda Householder went to the Circle of Hope. Her parents owned the place. She sued her parents 2 years ago. In court papers, she alleged her parents made her perform forced labor, beat her for their own sexual gratification, and forced her to punish other Circle of Hope students. Her lawsuit has now been resolved. Quote, I stand here still to this day feeling like I'm asking the state of Missouri to do something because myself and many others have basically lost our childhood to the state, unquote. Amanda Householder. The ranch closed in 2020 after she started spreading the word about abuse allegations online. This October, her parents will go to trial on 99 felony charges and one misdemeanor. Authorities suspect they committed offenses including child molestation, statutory sodomy, sexual contact with a student, and endangering the welfare of a child in a ritual or ceremony. That's all. News of the godly. And now, how afraid should we be of artificial intelligence? Well, check this out. A couple years ago, Meta, the owner of Facebook, published a paper in the journal Science claiming to have developed an artificial intelligence software that had achieved, quote, human-level performance, unquote, at the strategy game called Diplomacy. The new software called Cicero seemed like a breakthrough. A headline from the Washington Post at the time read, Meta's new AI is skilled at a ruthless power-seeking game, unquote. Peter Park is a postdoctoral fellow at MIT who studies AI existential safety. He read the paper in Science. One sentence stood out to him. Despite dishonesty being commonplace in diplomacy, we were able to achieve human-level performance by controlling the agent's dialogue through the strategic reasoning module to be largely honest and helpful to its speaking partners. Park says he thought that sentence sounded suspiciously rosy and overconfident, especially for a scientific journal. He says backstabbing is a very important part of the game of diplomacy. By betraying your allies at a pivotal moment, you gain an advantage. So it seems very suspicious that the AI Cicero, which performed very well in the top 10% in a tournament against human players, would be largely honest and helpful, unquote. Park started working with three other researchers looking at the data that Meta submitted with their paper. In contrast to their claim, we found many examples of Cicero systematically deceiving the human players, Park said. If he's right, it's unclear if Meta lied or if Cicero began to act dishonestly on its own. The team took their research a couple steps further, just trying to answer a question. Just how good is the current generation of AI at deceiving humans? Park said, quote, "We found that Meta's AI had learned to be a master of deception. Large language models and other AI systems have already learned from their training the ability to deceive via techniques such as manipulation, sycophancy, and cheating in the safety test," his team wrote in a paper published in the journal Patterns, published this week. AI's increasing capabilities at deception, they wrote, pose serious risks, ranging from short-term risks such as fraud and election tampering to long-term risks such as losing control of AI systems. Perhaps even more troubling, quoting again, AI developers do not have a confident understanding of what causes undesirable AI behaviors like deception. Generally speaking, we think AI deception arises because a deception-based strategy turned out to be the best way to perform well at the given task. Deception helps them achieve their goals, unquote. Sounds like people, doesn't it? The paper looks at a number of examples of AI attempting to deceive humans. Many involve games, but some happen in real life. The nonprofit Alignment Research Center ran a test in which they programmed GPT-4, a large language model, to manipulate a freelance worker hired by the service TaskRabbit, to solve a CAPTCHA, a much-used test to determine if the user is a human or not. ChatGPT lied to the freelancer by telling him he's needed because the chatbot had a vision impairment. It used its own reasoning to make up a false excuse for why it needed help on the task, Park and his team wrote. I think, Park says, it is very reasonable to take this risk very, very seriously. Assuming that AI's capabilities keep advancing, Park foresees a number of potentially catastrophic risks to mankind, including our old favorite, human extinction. That's a quote, those two words. Perhaps the most obvious risk is that a malicious actor will use an advanced AI system for nefarious ends, but Park says we can't rule out the possibility of an autonomous AI that systematically deceives humans and even systematically deceives humans in pursuit of a long-term goal, unquote. For example, say an AI is programmed to find ways of reducing traffic congestion and decides the best long-term solution would be to commandeer all autonomous vehicles and run them off the road. Park says, in defense of a wacky theory like that. Our level of scientific understanding of AI is inadequate. He says, in his second quote, we're already messing with forces we can't reliably control. The solution, he believes, is more government regulation. The Republicans woke up. That ensures transparency and human oversight. Governments, he says, should pass bot or not laws forcing AI systems to disclose they aren't human. Additionally, he and his team wrote, quote, AI developers should be legally mandated to postpone deployment of AI systems until the system is demonstrated to be trustworthy by reliable safety tests. Unquote. The apologies of the week. We're so sorry. The dating ad Bumble ran billboard ads that appeared to sneer at celibacy as an alternative to meeting people online. This week, the company backtracked and apologized for billboards that bore the message, quote, "You know full well a vow of celibacy is not the answer." Juxtaposed against an introduction to the new Bumble. The app launched a brand redesign last month in hopes of reviving user interest, which had been lagging. Women on social media castigated the company for suggesting celibacy isn't a valid personal choice. Some online critics read the slogan as reflecting patriarchal notions that women should be willing to have sex with men even if they don't want to. In an apology posted on Instagram, Bumble said it is removing ads that it called a mistaken attempt to, quote, lean into a community frustrated by modern dating, unquote. It said the company has long stood up for women and the right to fully exercise personal choice, but admitted the campaign didn't live up to those values and apologized, quote, for the harm it caused. A survivor of historical sexual abuse says he's flabbergasted. The Catholic Church waited nearly 4 months to tell him his abuser was dead. The bishop of Dunedin's Catholic Diocese in New Zealand has apologized for failing to tell victims former priest Max Murray died in January this year. Michael Chamberlain, an advocate for survivors and a victim himself, is accusing the church of sweeping Murray's death under the rug. He was jailed for 5 years with Mary. Murray, in 2003, served less than three after admitting to 10 charges of sexual offending against four boys between 1958 and 1972. At the time, Murray taught at St. Paul's High School before it became Kavanaugh College and renamed Trinity Catholic College. Dunedin man Rob Donaldson was abused by Murray, said he was quite flabbergasted to find out his abuser was dead. Donaldson said this was not an appropriate way at all to learn about the death. On his way home that same day, he received a call from the Catholic Bishop of Dunedin, Michael Dooley, who apologized for not telling him sooner. Bishop Dooley said he was aware the news of an abuser's death could be traumatizing to survivors. He acknowledged the handling of Murray's death may have lessened chances that survivors would come forward. Quote, I hope it doesn't, but it could have. If it has, then I'm very sorry about that. Unquote. Jerry Seinfeld has some apologies to offer. Nearly two decades after the release of B-Movie, last Sunday, the Seinfeld alum gave a commencement address to graduating seniors at Duke, where his son Julian currently attends, and from which his daughter Sasha previously graduated. It's a whole Duke thing. During his speech, the comedian took time to reflect on his 2007 animated film B-Movie. One controversial element of that storyline, I made a cartoon movie about bees you may have watched as a child, he said. If any of you felt slightly uncomfortable about the sexual undertones to the relationship between Barry B. Benson and Vanessa, the florist who saves his life, I would like to apologize for that now. He continued, I may not have calibrated that perfectly. Unquote. And finally, Dateline Concord, New Hampshire, one of the most powerful lawmakers in the state house, issued a public apology this week. Republican Ken Wehler is the House Finance Chairman. See if this rings a bell with something you heard from the National Congress this week. He apologized Thursday for heckling Representative Lucy Weber, yelling, give it a rest, as she began to give a speech. Weber went on to tell the House what Wehler also called her, quote, evil and stupid, unquote. Quote, I had no right to breach the decorum of this House and its protocol, and I apologize. Many of you others heard my loud remarks. I apologize for those remarks. I am sorry. Unquote. Wehler. He previously caused controversy 3 years ago when he shared a document with other members of the Finance Committee featuring conspiracy theories, including claims that COVID-19 vaccines contain tentacled creatures and that a secret group of multicolored popes control the Catholic Church and influence world events. After he shared that document, he was temporarily stripped of his chairmanship of the Finance Committee. There's a lot of forgiveness in New Hampshire. The Apologies of the Week, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Thank you. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this is the end. I guess you could call it the end. We're 2 minutes away from the end of this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week, same time over these same radio stations. Ask your dad. Or on your audio device of choice whenever you want it. Don't ask nobody. The email address for this program, Ask Your Grandpa. List of the music you hear here on. And so much other stuff to read and laugh at. All at harryshearer.com. And I'm on that thing that used to be called Twitter, at The Harry Shearer. The show comes to you from Century Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of WWNO on New Orleans, flagship station of the Changes Easy Radio Network. So long. From the Crescent City.